Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Kozo, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Call. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us through their actions to live a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Edmund Benson, and someone who really embodies today's theme of making a difference as elders. Thanks for joining today's call. Let's start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. Thank you. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call, today in conversation with Edmund Benson. Here's how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Rish, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Edmund Benson. And by the top of the hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing, where we invite all your reflections and questions. I've opened up the queue right now, so at any point you can hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us at ask@servicespace.org. That's ask@servicespace.org. Today's theme of making a difference as an elder is very dear to my heart. My family's from Hawaii, and I was just talking to Edmund about this, that, you know, in Hawaii, we have strong respect for our elders. We call them our kapuna. And we not only have respect for our elders that are living, but our elders who have passed. And they give us guidance and wisdom. And since I've moved to the mainland, you know, I see a lot of that has been lost. So I'm so excited to hear the reflections of Edmund and how important elders are and how they can make a difference. I'd like to introduce our moderator today. Today we have Rish, and we're so lucky to have him. It's interesting because a lot of Edmund's work began working with at-risk youth. And Rish, I know you did. You went up and visited the Culinary Institute where I forget the woman's name. Evelyn, I think, was doing some work with at-risk youth, teaching them culinary skills. So I know you have that crossover with Edmund, and I'm so excited to be on this call with you. Do you have any thoughts on our theme of making a difference as elders?
Yes, thank you, Kozo, and Ed, welcome to the call as well. You know, I was reflecting on the amount of work that Ed has done over the course of his life, but really starting late, and I was thinking about other people that have done that sort of work. Gandhi didn't come back and do his a huge amount of work in India till he was, you know, 40. And even later than that, Dr. V of the Arvind Eye Hospital, one of the largest eye care networks in the world, didn't start his work till he was 58. And similar to that, we have Ed today. You know, he told me that he's worked 16-hour days on his business till he was 52. And then he goes and pours that same energy post-retirement into the myriad initiatives that, you know, we'll hear about, ranging from work with at-risk youth, like you mentioned, Kozo. But he's also done environmental stewardship at a very large scale. He's done constructive aging curriculum, so really spanning the full spectrum of things that one might care about. I would like to welcome Ed. Ed, thank you for being on the call today. We have a lot to talk about.
Yes, I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Well, Ed, let's begin from the beginning with your childhood. Now, as a child, and this was in the 30s, you did not have the benefit of a positive home environment, and you shared some of that on a recent post. You were what they called bad news. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be? And in retrospect, did you view yourself to be an at-risk kid?
Yes, I did, and I was troubled, as they would say it in today's language. I was a troubled youth. I wasn't able to communicate properly with my parents. They were older, and they had issues, health issues, financial issues. And I was the youngest of four. And I was actually grew up to be the black sheep of the family. And I think that was all in preparation for the work I was going to do later in life.
Of course, you didn't know that at the time. You then, in when you were 15, enrolled in the Massachusetts National Guard, then onto the U.S. Merchant Marines.
Right.
Yes,
and then the Army.
And then the Army after that. Now, in all of these places, you were surrounded by tough characters. You yourself are young, brash, and now you're in the real world where it's pretty rough. There's no coddling there. So what impact did that have on you? And I ask because sometimes that sort of experience can harden your heart.
Well, actually, the Merchant Marine taught me some serious lessons. Most of the people at the end of the Second World War who were in the Merchant Marine were not very favorable people as far as their future was concerned, and many had received dishonorable discharges from the military, and this is the only job that they could get. So I learned a lot, and mostly I learned what not to do. And I was very, very fortunate as a young person in that drugs hadn't been invented then. So I didn't have to face that horrific situation where drugs are so prevalent today. So I was blessed as far as that's concerned. But I did learn what brought these people and alcohol and anger, things of that nature, caused their lives to go to make a U-turn. So that was a real learning experience. And in the Army, I learned lots of good things about regimentation and setting goals. And the Army was a really good experience. And all that ended it by the time I was 20.
Yeah, and some of that discipline no doubt helped you with your business. You entered business when you were 20 or 21. For 30 years, you worked 16-hour days, 7 days a week on your furniture rental business.
Right. That
was. And then if we fast forward, I'm just going to quickly fast forward 30 years to 1982. You put your heart into your business. And then after experiencing a lot of success in 1982, you said, okay, I'm going to retire. And now we're really coming to the heart of the conversation here, because instead of doing the things that most people do in their retirement, like golfing or gardening or travel, you and your wife, Susan, decide to spend 100% of your time helping vulnerable children navigate the world a little bit better. Can you tell us, Ed, why you chose to spend your retirement years in this fashion?
Well, it wasn't anything I had planned. It was an evolution, actually. We had we retired in Miami, and we had not spent very much time there. We had homes in Texas and another one in Boston. And when we finally did retire, we found that the county, Miami-Dade County, had built the world's largest incinerator about a mile from our front door. And it was, the smell was horrific of burning garbage, and ash, white ash, covered the neighborhood. And one morning, Susan, who was at that time much too young to retire, she was teaching school, and she said, "Ed, isn't there anything you can do about this stink?" And that was a call to arms, actually. And I spent the next, it was about 7 or 8 years, maybe a little longer, taming what I refer to in marketing and public relations material that I created. I refer to that garbage incinerator as the Miami Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spent a good deal of time taming that monster so that the neighborhood wouldn't have to deal with the problems of toxins and dioxin, the deadliest chemical known to humankind, emanating, just pouring out of these tall chimneys. So,
yeah, I was reading about this, your Miami Monster work, and when I first read about it, I thought surely you must have been politically connected to affect that level of change, because, you know, reading about it in retrospect, and this was an article written, you know, several years after, it seemed like a lot had gotten done since you first started. But it turns out that you were actually not at all politically connected or in any way influential at the time. You worked from the ground up at the grassroots level without the benefit of any connections or special access. I think of these large-scale garbage disposal, that's quintessentially politics. It involves government actors. How, and this is relevant in today's time as well, how did you mobilize? What does activism look like when you're starting with a mob of one, which is what you were, I think?
Well, I come from a marketing background in business, and I created marketing tools, postcards, posters, titling this environmental disaster as the Miami Monster and what it was doing to the neighborhood and what was pouring out of the smokestacks. So, and I didn't do any of this work in a confrontational fashion. We did picket the facility, and some of the state representatives, elected officials, were part of that picket. And it seemed as though I hit it. I came at it at the right time, and I rented a helicopter, and an aerial photographer was alongside, and we took pictures of what a horrendous mess the company who had built and designed that facility had made of the environment. And using those pictures that I had blown up to a huge size where it took two people to carry them, we made presentations and so forth, and convinced not only the neighbors, but the county government and the state of Florida to sue Dade County to refit the facility. And the county spent was over $100 million retrofitting the facility. And I was named to the task force to oversee this and sent to Canada to look at a replacement company. It was a real odyssey. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, what strikes me about this is one of the things you said earlier, which is that your style was non-confrontational. And certainly today we see people, myself included, displaying this righteous, one could say justified anger in the face of injustice or the things that we see wrong. How did you come to you know that, I mean, how did you come to channel your anger, your ire, whatever you want to call it, in this productive, I'll say non-confrontational way where you're not demeaning, ridiculing people, but and you mentioned this yourself, you peck away at a problem till it goes away, kind of like Socrates, who saw himself as the gadfly stinging the political machine of Rome.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so what brings you to non-confrontation as your, you know, yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, I wasn't that type of person growing up, certainly, and getting along in the Merchant Marine and in the Army, you certainly couldn't step backwards all the time. But, and I think you say it perfectly on your publication, by changing yourself, you can change the world. I realize that people don't want to listen to people that are yelling in their face and calling them names and demeaning them. So I actually changed myself on a gradual basis so that I was a more pleasant person. I was someone that you could speak to rationally. And things sort of began moving the way I wanted them to.
Mm-hmm. And then how did this work? So, you retire, you get involved in this environmental issue, this large environment issue, largely based on a call to arms from your wife, who, lovely person, and I'm going to get more into your relationship, which is beautiful as well. How does that work then lead to your work with At-Risk Youth? Was there, you said that it all kind of happened organically, it evolved. What was the evolution there?
Well, here it is. Susan was teaching school, and I was convinced that bringing recycling to Dade County would reduce the amount of garbage that was going to the incinerator. So Susan, again, being the engine of this team, we decided to begin an environmental group in her classroom. Mm-hmm. What happened is that the teachers observed what Susan was doing, and they said, gee, that's a great idea. So most of the teachers in the school were teaching environmental issues. And that's really, it began with that. And then Susan said, after a period of time, I'm concerned. These kids are really at risk if they bring their recyclables, and we were just teaching them. No one knew what a recyclable was back in that day. If they bring them to the curb, they could get shot. So we thought, well, what can we do about that? So knowing, and again, Susan has been the motivating force for me in every step. It's that she gives me the marching orders, not intentionally, but it sort of ends up like that. And we work together. So what we decided is that we needed to help these at-risk kids. Well, most of the kids, I could relate to this population, obviously, because I was one of them. Mm-hmm. So we were able, because of the contacts that I had developed in the county by then, I was able to go behind bars into the prisons and the juvenile facilities and ask the kids and adults, how could we help you not make the same mistake again? So that brings you back, because historically, once kids and adults get into the system, they keep repeating and repeating it until they're maybe their mid-20s. So I used their answers to create the original lessons. Most of them were about anger. It was anger primarily. So that's how we first started, and then it's that sort of grew until we had programs and training for staff. Well, first we created the curricula, And then we said, how are we going to get the curricula to the kids behind bars? So we said, well, I guess we have to train the guards in the juvenile facilities and in the adult facilities how to teach the material. So we came up with a really interesting training program. And I guess we have trained probably close to 5,000 life skill instructors.
Yeah, I read about that, and I also read that just in Florida alone, you have upward of 4 million documented hours of life skill lessons.
Yes, yes, that's so good.
So that's incredible, and that was even a dated number. That was in 2010. And speaking of curriculums, I just want to note for our speakers, for our listeners who, you know, might not have a sense of the amount of work you and Susan have done, you know, you've written 100 books teaching life skills to at-risk people, but also to caregivers in the community. And I'd like to read off some of the titles now of these books and curriculums to give people a sense of the topics and the range. You know, we have prenatal care, delivery, and mental development as one of the curriculums. We have So You're Thinking of Dropping Out of School, Substance Abuse and Guns. We have an instructor manual titled Violence and Conflict, Creating a Positive Outlook, Being Safe, Secrets of Success, Self-Esteem, Anger Management for Adults, not just youth, and even Health and Hygiene. And the thing that I was really struck by, so also I want to mention that now this curriculum is not just in the U.S. It's been, I guess, sourced into Australia, Canada, England, Jamaica, New Zealand, Bahamas, Mexico, the list goes on. So you and Susan pour your heart into this endeavor, Ed, but then you do something I think is fascinating. Suddenly on your 80th birthday, you say, okay, this curriculum feels pretty comprehensive, and so now I'm going to give this all away. And on your 80th birthday, as a gift to yourself, you make this entire curriculum open source and make it part of the Creative Commons, all 100-plus life skills curriculums. What moved you to do this?
I'm sorry, I missed the last words that you said.
Oh, I was saying that you, on your 80th birthday, you gave away the entire curriculum. You made it open source.
Let me just interrupt for a second. Okay. What I did, the material that we have in Arise Foundation, which is the name of our nonprofit foundation, we had it translated into Spanish. And on my 80th birthday, I made it open source for any language that someone wanted to translate the material into other than Spanish. They had our permission to do this. Uh-huh. So it was to translate the material into another language primarily.
Uh-huh. And what moved you to do that?
The goal of everything that we do is to share it, is to put the material and the thoughts and the lessons in the hands and hearts and heads of as many people as possible. That's the goal.
That's beautiful. Thank you. One of the articles I was reading had mentioned that you don't really have a reverse gear. You said that yourself to me in a pre-conversation on Wednesday, that you either go for something fully or not at all. And looking at the work you've done, you know, I look at this and I think, well, yes, there's that drive. Behind that, there also seems to be an immense clarity of purpose, something that I think a lot of us struggle with, you know, given competing priorities, nuanced views, all of that. So how do you, at a personal level, where do you get your clarity from?
Well, I think in really the simplest terms, and I think of that, is I just let God work his goodwill in me and through me and enable me to do what I'm supposed to be doing during this time on earth. So I'm just following directions.
And do you find that the directions come clearer when you put yourself in certain environments or in a certain mindset, you know, because I think some of us could wait all we want and we're not getting any directions from anybody.
Well, I don't have a particular place that I would go to meditate, although I do meditate occasionally. I've sort of tuned myself in to be available for directions. I think that's really, you know, people say, well, they have a muse, and I'm a messenger, which I am, but I just sort of tuned myself in. As a matter of fact, I have a little tuning knob that I have on my desk, and I don't have it here now, but it's very close. And that's really what I came to do, is to tune in when I'm looking for an answer in particular. I'm just tuned in, and I know that I will receive the answer. Most often, I think the roadblock is not trusting your own instinct. Mm. And I am 100% in sync with my instinct. Well, that rhymes too. I'm in tune with my instinct. And I just know that if I wake up in the middle of the night with a thought, then I know that where that came from. It didn't come from me. It came from out there, and I pay very close attention. And recently, it's been mostly the topics for the positivity cards, which we happen to love and share on a regular basis.
Can you tell us more about the positivity cards? I think it's a beautiful concept and would love for folks to hear about it.
Oh, sure. Let me tell you how it originated, because that's a fun story. So Susan and I were married almost 50 years ago. And just soon after we were married, we attended a conference in Carmel, California. And it was the second day of the conference, and they were men and women, and which I guess is pretty normal. And we were sitting around the table on day two. Susan was sitting next to me, and there was a break. And a woman came, leaned over the table. She was on the other side. She leaned over and handed me a card. And this card said, I get the shivers when I'm telling you this every time I relate this story. Mm-hmm. The card said that she is a member of the Man Watchers Association of America. And then on the back she wrote, "I find you a very attractive man." And she walked away. That card had lived with me for 40 years anyway? And we were in the juvenile justice prisons, and I hope you've never been in one, but the guards are tough, and they can be very nasty. And they're always looking to find fault with the kids. So I said, wouldn't it be great? Let's create a card that says, "You've been noticed doing something good." And we began handing the cards out to the guards and to the kids. Kids weren't allowed to keep them. They could take them with them when they were released. You understand this, that as a kid, I never, ever received a compliment. Lots of criticism, but never, never a compliment. So that card, the first card, number one, that still resonates with me. I still hand them out on a regular basis, and they have the same effect. But in behind bars with kids who were like me, that you were noticed doing something good. And there's a quote on the reverse side. That quote, "It takes no more time to see the good side of life than it takes to see the bad. And this was a quote by Jimmy Buffett. Well, sometimes I think people like the Jimmy Buffett quote better than they do the decide what. But in any case, it works like a charm. People love it. People hold on to them. They tell me when I see people, I still have that card.
Well, oh, that's amazing.
That's card number one. Understand, we now have 264 cards. We have a card. We have cards for every program, and these are all available at the Arise Life Skill website. And the most recent card that I've created, the front side, this shows fireworks exploding, beautiful fireworks, and underneath that it says Living the Dream. That's side one. Side two, Living the Dream basically means waking up, doing exactly what you want to do, living the type of life you want to live. Believe me, it's pretty awesome.
That's beautiful. And speaking of living the dream, Ed, let's talk about your wife, Susan, who I think had the pleasure of speaking with on Wednesday, and your relationship is just so special. You've always maintained that she's your greatest inspiration and also a critical collaborator in all of your work. In fact, you were telling me how some of, you know, your environmental stewardship work, all of that, is in some way has been inspired by Susan. Can you tell us more about the ways in which you were nurtured and you thrived as a result of this relationship? And how your relationship with Susan cemented your common purpose rather than detract from it?
Well, again, I was a negative person. And even back in my 30s when I met Susan. And it was miraculous to me what someone would find attractive in this negative person. But Susan somehow found this personality attractive, and never once did she ever attempt to change me. I just, I smile at it, I just learned to emulate her behavior, which is sweet from early morning till late at night. She just has a wonderful personality and a wonderful way about her. And the fact that she never, ever tried to change me. And I think that's the reason that I was able to change so radically. It's for a rebel, none of us like having anybody tell us what to do. And that sort of sent the fireworks exploding. And what was Susan, it was never, you know, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? Never, never, never.
Wow.
Never.
Beautiful. Yeah, I was struck by how deeply you appreciated each other. Even when I last talked to you, it's truly wonderful. You do have another, and this speaks, you know, earlier Koza was mentioning how you're basically, you know, spanning your work goes from, okay, let's start with youth who are at risk and who are making difficult life choices. Now, recently, you've moved to actually engaging the elderly, if I understand correctly, and with a program called a Constructive Aging Program. And that's
right,
near and dear to your heart at the moment. Could you tell us a bit about this, I'll say, somewhat new initiative and what precipitated that?
Well, first of all, it'll be my pleasure to do that. And I retired at 85 years of age, and I attended a men's group. First, I've never ever attended any groups, but this, I figured that I would try something new. So I attended a men's group, and I came to the revelation, first of all, I pitied the poor wives that had to put up with these guys. They were universally unhappy and negative. Okay. And I said, oh, my goodness, I pity these poor women. So, and they didn't have any of the skills that one needed. I mean, some would be happy spending a whole day playing some version of poker or whatever. Others did a variety of gambling or whatever. But they didn't have the skills that were necessary to make themselves happy, and let alone that poor suffering woman that was sharing their retirement. I became very interested in what people were doing in this last stage of their life, and I found out that it was dismal. I mean, there's only so much golf and so much bridge that people can involve themselves in. So I began looking into what about creating a life skills program for at-risk adults, people 60 and over. And that really had taken me, I have spent about a little over 2 years analyzing and amassing material. We now have over 1,000 topics that can be taught in group sessions, topics such as happiness and gratitude, memory improvement, positive steps for dealing with worry, the importance of napping, a better balance. Yeah, napping is really an issue and such a delight. How people lose their balance and break a hip or whatever it is. So a balancing club, conquering stress, preventing isolation, staying relevant. Here's what happens. Grandparents primarily, these are people 60 and above, they lose touch with their grandchildren because they look at them as archaic, because they're out of touch. And what I've put together is material that brings them in contact with the younger family members, that makes them relevant instead of a relic. Mm. And the groups, the people in the group, 60 and above, they want to talk. They don't want to text. So we have created 90-minute guided group discussions. And we have it broken down, and it's just been wonderful. Susan, again, as the person in the forefront, has been doing these programs, and it's been just great. And we've also, what we do is include music. Some of the songs you folk, younger people, will never remember. Doris Day's Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think, and Live on the Sunny Side of the Street, the Bee Gees' Staying Alive, Willie Nelson.
I know that one.
Right? Blues Guys. And then The Wiz, Nobody Bring Me No Bad News.
And that's great.
Ethel Merman's Everything Coming Up Roses, all positive things. So we did that.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And then we thought, okay, all of the older people, there was a man that came to this men's group that I attended. He was a Marine captain in the First World War, and he was hard of hearing, and he came to the group, and he was pretty much ignored. And I thought, my goodness, we need to create something where we capture these wonderful stories that everybody has. So we created an intergenerational life stories program where high school seniors, college students can go into nursing homes, assisted living, and capture those stories that these older adults have that are so beautiful, and not to lose them when they pass on. So we created program. And then we created another. Yeah, it is beautiful. You're right. You're right. We did this for Susan's dad, and we sat with him and created and printed out. We made a catalog of it and gave it to all the children and grandchildren of Susan's dad's life story. And then we also created the 1440 Club. And that program for people who are undergoing therapy. They are incapacitated. They can't move easily. So we've created something that they can do while they're sitting in a wheelchair or bed-bound, whatever. And the reason I call it the 1440 Club, because there are 1,440 minutes a day, and the goal is to give thanks every minute for the wonderful blessings we live.
So, wow, that's amazing.
Well, that's fun. And then also, the people who are 54% of older Americans lack sufficient retirement funds. 20% have tapped into their 401ks already. So they're also carrying the burden of student loans for their children and grandchildren. Yep. And often the retirees are still caring for their parents. So running out of money is a huge, and personal health issues are also a major concern. So people need a place where they can come and talk and complain, because everyone is going through the same issues. Some are better off than others financially, but we all get older. We all at some time or other need medical help. And what worries me is who is going to care for these people when they need this long-term care service. And this ties in, again, to at-risk populations, because the people who care for the elderly in nursing homes and assisted living facilities and so forth, they're earning $7.50 an hour. They're working part-time. They're lifting people and hurting themselves. So that population is not the jobs in that those facilities are not desirable, but they are necessary for many people with limited education. So we have a program which is quite similar to what we've done in Arise, in training people, training the patients how to be less rude, how to be more civil, and why rudeness stops people from working together. So those are just of the things that we're working on.
Wow, that's a very, very good and comprehensive overview of that program. And I really appreciate how your definition of at risk is really much broader than what one might think it is, you know, including these adults as part of at risk. And you said, you know, at risk to me means, when we were talking earlier, you said it's not just the youth, but it's the community that's at risk, because we all are at risk. Is there more that you'd like to say about that at all?
Well, I tell you what I would like to add, and I don't want to forget this.
Yes, sure.
At Arise, we created a free app. So, and it contains 55 positivity cards. that can be emailed. And they're in the iTunes store, and they're also in the Android store. And they're just put in Positivity Cards or Arise Positivity Cards, and then
you're pretty tech savvy, Ed. You've got it on the iPhone and Android. That's amazing.
Yeah, and they're fun, and they are, you know, just being able to communicate with people and send something that will brighten a person's day. I mean, it's just the best.
That's beautiful. And what do you say to people? You know, you yourself have been, you said you entered your first retirement from your work at 52. Really, you haven't retired till you were 85. And even now, you know, I think you're still working on things. What would you say to people? And obviously, you've got this aging, constructive aging program. What do you say to people who say, I'm too old, or I've done my piece, or any number of things that imply that there's an expiration date to our contributions?
Well, I guess what I would say is you can never help another without helping yourself. So if you really want to be good to yourself, you'll find a way to help others. And that has nothing to do with just age, but when you get to be of a certain age where you're not involved in earning daily bread, you can begin thinking about how you can help others. And doing the constructive aging program in nursing homes or community centers or VA hospitals is an unlimited amount of good that people can do if they want to be involved. And it doesn't require very much of a time. We're talking about an hour and a half. And brings such joy into people's lives to know that they're being considered, that someone really has taken the time. So I think that if people want our first lesson, now understand we have 1,200 topics. The number one, what do we decide to do as the first topic? And that's happiness. Happiness and the power of a smile. That is the first lesson. That also happens to be card number 123.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I gave this card. Susan and I were out walking early this morning. And on one side, it says, live happy. And on the other side, the card says, it's a scientific fact that the brain can only hold one thought at a time. Replace negative thoughts when you're angry, sad, or worried with a smile. Wow, this is magic because it works. So a couple were just unloading their boat from their pickup to go fishing, and we happened to walk by. And the woman, I don't know, I just felt she deserved this card. Well, I gave her this card, and she said, how did you know? How did you know this? And she put her hand over her heart. She said, this is so, so important. And then I said, well, there's a message in each letter of live happy. The L has horseshoes for good fortune. The I has a candle for lots of birthdays and anniversaries and celebrations. The V in live has an apple in it for good health until the very end. The E in live has an American flag and being grateful for living in this wonderful country. And happy, the H in happy has hearts for lots of love in your life. The A and happy has dollar signs for ample supply of money. The P in happy has a star. You're the star of your own movie. And then the P in happy has ice cream cone in it, and that's for sweetness for all of your days. And then, and I always pause for this one, I say, then the Y is your very own flower garden. And every good gardener knows that you need to get rid of the crabby grass and the weed that could impede your growth. Wow.
This reminds me, that's beautiful, thank you, Ed. This reminds me about, you know, we were chatting a little bit before the call, and you talked about how you yourself are planting seeds in a garden that you may never see bloom. And I think fair to say that your life has been, you know, service and positivity are kind of at the center of it. I also wanted to read something that you said earlier, which is one of the sayings you live by, which is when you get, give, right? Am I getting that right? And when you learn, teach. And I feel like this is powerful coming from you because this is really how you've lived your life. So I would like to close, I guess, this will be the last question from me for now before we open it up for questions from the broader audience. But and you've done this throughout the talk, but is there something, if you wanted callers to take away from your life experience, and we often in my culture, you know, we're asking elders for advice, we're asking them to kind of sum up their life experiences and say, how can we benefit from what you've learned? Is there something you would like to share that kind of encapsulates everything that you've done, that you're about, that you've experienced? Not to put too much pressure on you there, but anything you'd like to say.
Well, there's another good quote, and that's the meaning of life is to find your gift, and the purpose of life is to give it away. And that's Shakespeare. And I think that we all have a need to give away that which we've accumulated, and it doesn't have to be money. It could be good feelings, it could be concern, it could be love, it could be whatever you feel, but give it away. And also, and we use this in the program, is getting rid of negativity. I am totally involved in positivity. I don't watch programs, television programs that are negative. I don't want to be around people that are swearing or unpleasant. And as a matter of fact, I have an iWatch that we've programmed. I say we, my IT fellow programmed it. So every 15 minutes on my iWatch, I get a positive affirmation. So every 15 minutes. So if you decide that you want to live a happier life, you can't do it around negative people and reading negative headlines and emails and all of that. You need to fill up on positivity. So I'm not selling it. I don't own any Apple stock, but I think the Apple Watch is a wonderful place to program a watch that you get a positive message every 15 minutes. And the first one at 12 a.m. is to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the day, the night. Thou canst not then be false to any man. And that's, again, William Shakespeare. But it goes on and on and on, and I just, the only true gift is a portion of yourself. That's Emerson. From the errors of others, a wise man corrects his own.
Beautiful.
Listen to your inner guidance system and let it guide you to the path that brings your heart the most joy. And I'll give you That's okay.
And then we'll hand it over to Kozo. Share that quote that you wanted to.
All right. By three methods, we may learn wisdom. First, by reflection, which is the noblest. Second, by imitation, which is the easiest. And third, by experience, which is the bitterest. That's Confucius.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I think hopefully we had talked about, I really was feeling like, I don't know how we're going to get through the entire span of your life and all the things you've done. Hopefully we've done it a little bit of justice here, but thankfully we still have a good amount of time left. But I'd like to allow our listeners and Kozo to weigh in and see if there are questions that are that they have. So I'll hand it over to Kozo for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I could listen to those all day long. That's amazing. You program your iWatch to recall those every 15 minutes. I'm not an elder and I can't program an iWatch, so I'm really in awe. I want to invite our listeners to either share reflections or ask Ed a question. You can hit *6. I have the Q&A open. You can hit *6 on your phone, or you can email us at ask@servicespace.org. That's ask@servicespace.org. We already have a number of reflections and a caller on the line, but I'm going to use my priority as host to ask a question, Ed, and just an amazing journey, and there's so much life and vitality in what you're doing and who you are. I can't imagine publishing 100 books, writing 1,000, guidelines for different populations. I heard a study that was done recently, and what they did is they took two groups, and one group they had to exercise every day, and another group they had to volunteer work one time a week. And after, I think, 6 weeks of the study, they measured health signs, and it turns out that doing volunteer work once a week makes you more healthy than exercising every day. And I know you're 80 years old, and I'm wondering if all this, since your retirement, if all this service and all this creativity and contribution and gifting, if you've seen the physical side effects of that, if you've felt health benefits from it, if you felt, just the ability to live a more healthy and wholesome life in the elder years.
Well, there is no question that, I'm constantly exercising my mind. And I think that's very beneficial. But I also exercise the rest of me, too. So I don't think it's an either-or situation. But actually, you're being too kind to me. I was 80 about 7 years ago. As a matter of fact, I'm 31. When someone asks my age, I say I'm 31 months from being 90.
Wow. And you're doing more than I'm doing at 51, Ed. So that's amazing. That's beautiful.
Well, here's the
87.
Thing. Understand that this is the lifestyle that I chose really 67 years ago. I chose to work 2 days a day. I chose the first 15 years of my, I was married for 15 years. originally, and I never took a vacation in that 15 years. So I am totally, totally dedicated to what I'm doing. Not to say I haven't taken vacations, because I have, but I don't want a vacation. There's no place I could be that would be better for me right now than working and creating.
Wow. That's a beautiful way to live life. I have a, my father-in-law, he's a Qigong master, and he told me something a long time ago. He said, you know, in America, everybody has the goal to retire, you know, like to retire early, to retire with a lot of money, whatever. And he said, you know, Kozo, I never want you to retire. And, you know, I looked at him like he was crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? You never want me to retire. I want to retire, you know. And he said, even if you stop working, I want you to have something you wake up every morning and do. Like, I don't want you sleeping in, doing nothing. He says, you need to get up, even if it's just get up and walk outside and get the paper and have a routine and go to a coffee shop. He's like, I want you to continue to you know, be like, you know, a person who has something to do, you know. And he says, because he's seen, he's pushing 90 now too. He said he's seen so many of his patients. He was an acupuncturist, who retire and then they die, you know, because they don't have this drive and this purpose and this outside of it. So you're a living testament to that.
Wow, that was very good advice, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I didn't. When I first heard it, I said, "You're a crazy old man." That's what I thought. But now, listening to you, and now as I get older, and I see the wisdom behind that, you know, and I see a path that can lead to a fulfilling, healthy, longevity. And so thank you.
Wonderful.
We've got some callers on the line, so I'm gonna bow down and let some others share your wisdom. So let's see, we've got Mish.
Hi everyone.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hey,
yeah, Mish.
Where is a bell?
Edmund, Harvey and I have just been filled with delight. I can't tell you how delighted it is to hear you speak. I've known you and Susan for over 50 years. In fact, I was 12 years old when I first met Susan. I'm 69 now, and I have learned so much about the service journey that the two of you have taken that I did not know before. I just want to thank you for agreeing to share your story. I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes thinking about how you've helped people, how you've devoted so much of your lives to helping others. Just thank you, thank you, thank you, and a big hug for you and a big hug for Susan.
Thanks, Michelle. We feel blessed that you felt confident enough to recommend us.
Yes, and you did not embarrass me.
Good.
You made me laugh. So just, it's been wonderful, and I'm just so grateful that you have shared your story with us, because it's awe-inspiring and deep admiration, and that's the end of my tribute. Thank you so much.
Great. Say hi to Harvey for me.
I sure will.
Wow. Now it's starting to make sense, Edmund, that you're good friends with Mish.
I
Mish.
The secret is out.
Beautiful. Well, callers are calling in, so I'm going to pass it to our next caller.
Hi, this is Jane, and I have just had the absolute pleasure of getting to hear my dad. So,
wow.
So I just want to say thank you, and hi, Dad.
Hi.
Just from like a totally different perspective, you know, to have watched the evolution of my dad. It's just, it's amazing. Like, woo, it's so beautiful. And one of the huge takeaways and gifts that he's given me, and believe me, there are many, both my dad and Susan give me many gifts, but there's something about this being open to inside direction and the willingness to listen to it and letting that be your guide to help direct you to where you give and how you give, that, man, I don't think you need to be 60 to start there. I'm 58, and hopefully I've started, you know, doing that. And I really do think that that is a path all of us can take, no matter what we're faced with, because it is so true that in the giving, I mean, I have learned this by watching my dad and Susan, and then by hopefully doing it to some degree, is that in that giving comes the true joy and happiness. So really just want to say thanks, Dad, thanks, Sue, and to you guys for hosting him. This is just awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, well, you are a chip off the old block. I can say that with pride. That just fills me with joy, Jane. So thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom.
Wow, Jane, thank you so much. That's so beautiful to share, you know, that not only has your father, you know, made you proud, but also influenced how you follow your own guidance and start gifting, contributing where you're at in your life.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Wow.
I want to follow up on that a bit. And Ed, so I have two young children. They're 9 and one just turned 7. So 9 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I'd love for them to have that service mentality and to follow their inner guidance. Do you have any, you know, parenting tips for us on how to, you know, I think it takes a lot of faith and trust to raise your child to follow their inner guidance, both for them to trust themselves, but also for us to trust them. So do you have any stories or experiences or guidance along those lines?
Yeah, I think I had two daughters. One was older than Jane, and she passed away. But she had she has her MBA. She was going to be a psychiatric social worker, and Jane is has an MBA, and she is a coach among many other things. And I think that it all results from watching and listening to what the dad and the mom are doing. And, you know, we all have what they call mirror neurons.
Mm.
We basically learn by copying other people. And if that's really where it comes from. If you exemplify what you want your children to be like, all they need to do is mirror you. It works like that. And if you want to learn more about mirror neurons, there's a wonderful, wonderful YouTube video on the topic. But we are all learning from one another. When you yawn, if I'm around you, I'll probably yawn. If you scratch your head, I'll probably do the same. And we do things like that. And by watching, and there's a wonderful quote I was trying to recall, which I'm not going to be able to, about emulating parents.
Beautiful. And Jane, since we have you on the line, can you share with us any time where you watched your father and Susan and you know, mirrored that in your own life or were inspired by that? Sure.
I was thinking about the what my dad was referring to, but like the willingness to be transparent about the things that you believe, and not just that you say, but you walk, and in letting your kids sort of understand that, not assume that they will, but the willingness to talk about it, to involve them. I mean, I think seeing, doing, experiencing for kids, in order to really get it, it's one thing to kind of maybe understand in your head. It's another to really get it in your heart, to experience these things with your parents, to be able to, you know, like I used to go to school with Susan and see her work with kids who were deaf. I certainly got a very strong work ethic from working for my dad as a young kid, or I really wanted this great camera, and he's like, you need to get a job in the summer, and you know, sort of instilling these things not just by talking it, but by living it, seeing them live it, but also then living it yourself, I think are all great ways of doing that, and to be willing to be transparent about those things.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jane. Yeah. We didn't mean to put you on the spot, but thank you.
Oh, sure.
That was great.
We have another caller, so I'm going to pass it on.
Hi, is this Mr. Benson? This is one of your good friends. This is Lenny.
Hi, Lenny.
Edit, by the way, Ruth and I have been listening for the past hour, and it's just like when we all get together socially. It's always a wonderful experience when hearing about you and talking about you and Susan. We've talked about this before, and you know, of course, that I practice elder law and I deal with a lot of senior clients. You talked a little bit earlier about clients staying relative, or about people staying relevant when they get to be a certain age.
Right.
I discuss that with clients, but expand on that a little bit more, because I want to be able to talk with my clients about what I consider to be one of the most important issues as people get older, staying relevant. You've done that, but explain to me your philosophy.
Well, actually, it involves getting out of the daily routine that we've all accustomed to ourselves to, for instance, when we're working, you know, that whole system of going to work and coming home and doing whatever. But those days when you retire and have free time, it's time to change. It's time to move in another direction. And if you want to stay in contact with the younger members of your family, you do that because they will find nothing to speak to you about. They just look at elders as being totally out of touch. And that, Lenny, is another reason why we developed this program. And that is to make sure, because of the 1,000 plus, actually it's 1,200 lessons, the material is focused on driverless cars, focusing on communicating today as opposed to not waiting for the telephone to ring because your kids and grandkids are not using the phone. They text. We want to talk. They want to text. So if you want to communicate, you need to do what they're doing. I don't know that we're going to jump onto Snapchat, and but Facebook certainly. You must keep in touch. As the kids understand that you're anxious to be in touch with them and you look forward to it and you're amazed at what they're doing and how you'd love to learn how to do those things yourself, they probably would be willing to help. And if you'll make notes while they're helping you so that you're not constantly bugging them for additional information, or, oh, I forgot, would you tell me how to do this again? Well, that doesn't work. So I would think being able to communicate on the same level as your kids and grandkids makes you more relevant. And again, attending the group sessions and learning about all the different topics that we offer, and they're all relevant. There isn't anything that is historical. So I think, did I answer your question?
You always answer my question, but that is exactly the information that I needed, and something that I can pass on to my clients, and also sometimes that I will take to heart with my grandchildren also. So
one thing, Lenny, let me just, I'm looking at my positivity card collection here as I was speaking to you. And I think, well, I should say two things. One thing is that as we grow older, our skin gets thinner, not only physically, but mentally. And I think that as we grow older, it's really, really important to forgive those members of the family that have made mistakes, that have caused you grief. That is essential for peace of mind. Forgiving. Totally important. Well,
I appreciate that. One last thing, and I just pulled this out of my wallet.
Go ahead.
It's a positivity card you gave me, and I keep it with me always because it says on the first side, I can and I will, no excuses. And on the back it says, if you want something you've never had, then you've got to do something you've never done.
Right. Yep. That's a good one.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lenny. Say hi to Ruth.
I will do that.
Wow. It's amazing to watch all the ripples that you've created, Ed, come flowing back to you just on this call, you know, like so many people just showing appreciation and gratitude and wisdom that you've shared with them throughout your life. So it's beautiful. I had a follow-up question on something you were talking, and I, you know, these positivity cards are beautiful, and you were talking about, replacing the negativity with positivity. Just from your conversation with Jane, you've had a child die, you know, and they say for a parent, you know, that's one of the hardest things in life is if your child dies before you, So obviously that was, you know, a hard thing for you to get through. How did you maintain your positivity in such an event that, you know, could drive a lot of people into really serious negativity or depression?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I had Susan to share all of that unpleasantness with, and that made all the difference. That would be number one. And Ellen was a diabetic, and she never paid much attention to her health issue. As a result, she shortened her life. But while she was here, she was just a wonderful person, and I was proud of her, and we had a lot in common. And I just know that the time she spent here was wonderful, and that was all she was supposed to have. But let me just mention to you, you mentioned your two children, and I pulled up a positivity card On the one side, it says children need patience, guidance, and positive role models, which is probably pretty much what we were talking about. Side two says they're children. If the right they always knew, they'd be about as old as you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Ed. I'll hold that positivity card with me. You know, I'll make my own over here. Just write it down and hold that with me as my children get older. No, thank you so much. That's beautiful.
Well, just send me your email. I'll send you the card.
Yeah, for sure.
No problem.
And we're gonna share your email in if it's okay with you, in with our when we post our transcript, and also when we send out a thank you. So, and we'll also share where people can get the positivity card. So. We're running out of time, but we do have another caller on the line, so I want to try to squeeze them in.
Sure.
Hello, this is Eileen. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Eileen. How are you?
Fine.
This is great.
I want to say, I came in a little late, unfortunately, but what I have heard from you, I thought I knew you, I'm just overwhelmed with pride to have an association with you. And I want to say that the overriding theme that kind of came in my mind was you are working so hard and to leave this planet a better place than you experienced it when you came into it. And it's for people that you don't know. It's people whose lives you may never touch, but that you're so interested in sharing this gratitude you have and the wisdom. And I want to say that one thing I really like is that you don't just practice this for other people. You practice it close to home. You know, it obviously showed in Jane and she's gotten. You shared that with my husband, your nephew. And then what I really like is that your vulnerability, you have so much knowledge and you have so much experience, and yet you allow yourself to be open to the fact that maybe there's still some learning, that you're not perfect, and it makes you very genuine, very real,
yeah.
And I think that's what contributes to this plethora of ideas that come to you all night long.
Mm. Well, thanks,
so thank
I
you.
Mean, and, well, I am far from perfect, I can tell you that, and I do have a lot to learn, and I'm doing my best to learn as much as I can on a daily basis, and it's fun.
Yeah, well, you convey that very clearly, yes, that you're really enjoying what you're doing. Yes, I've seen that. I've seen you give out and I've seen your mirror neurons and the waitress's neurons going back and forth.
That's true.
Yeah. That's and the positivity true. Cards going back and forth, yes.
Yeah. It's a blast.
Well, thank you.
Eileen, thank you. I just wished that everybody had a collection of positivity cards in their pocket, and as they spent the day going from one thing to another, that they would run out of positivity cards, and that people they handed them to say, oh, you made my day, and I'm going to keep that right here. Waitresses usually keep them in that black folder. Wait, people, they keep them in the black folder that they keep the checks in, and I'm going to keep that here to remind me. So, yeah, that's a treat. So if everybody could do that, we would have a happier planet.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Hey,
thanks, Eileen.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Eileen. Ed, we have a couple comments on the web forms. Harvey says, Edmund, amazing. The last time we spoke, you were worried about your memory. Well, my friend, with your quotations across the centuries, you certainly haven't lost a beat. Cheers.
Javi is a special guy.
And then Amina Rodriguez from Clearwater, Florida, says, I'm very interested in starting an intergenerational program for elderly to share their stories with youth here in Clearwater, Florida. Where would you suggest I start to begin this project?
I think that she should email us at constructiveaging@gmail.com and include her phone number, and we'll be happy to help.
So it's constructiveaging@gmail.com.
Right. And there is no charge. We are not selling anything.
Yeah, except for positivity, love, gratitude, and well-being. You're not selling it. You're giving it away, right?
Right. Free of charge. Free of charge.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful, Ed. So we always end with one final question, and it's what can we do as a service-based community? What can we do to aid you in your work or in your mission, Ed? And I know you're doing so much, but is there anything that we can do as a community or as individuals also to aid you in what you in your life's purpose?
Well, yes, I would say forgive everybody that's done something that you're not happy with. That would be number one. And join that 1440 club and spend the 1440 minutes a day that each of us has, no more, no less. You could be rich or poor. You only receive 1440 minutes a day. Spend those minutes giving thanks for all the blessings that you have.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Forgiveness and blessings. 1,440
really?
Blessings. Beautiful.
Right.
Thank you for that invitation.
Yes. So that's really it. And, being able to flood yourself with positivity, staying away from the negativity, and it's so out there today, so much in the way of negative things on television particularly, just avoid it and stay with the positive. And this one last positivity card, I forgive you because it's good for me. That's the title of one of the books that we've written. Forgiveness is not something we do for others. We forgive so we can move on with our lives.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ed. Rish, do you have any closing comments or last words?
No, I wanted to say thank you again so very much. And, obviously as evidence from the outpouring of appreciation during the Q&A, clearly, Ed, you're making a huge difference in people's lives, and I personally feel so blessed to have had the chance to connect with you, and I'm sure we all on the call feel the same way. So thank you deeply.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and we thank, each and every one of you who worked. You folks have put together a beautiful program that is so professionally done. And I've been enamored of it since it was introduced to me. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. We end our call with, we invite everyone to hold a collective minute of silence and gratitude. And then after the silence, we'll open up the lines and do a gratitude out loud together. We can thank Ed and thank, the universe for bringing us all this beauty and wisdom and life on this call today. So we'll start with a minute of silence. Thank you. I'll open. I unmuted everybody. So on the count of three, let's all say thank you to Edmund for this beautiful call. One, two, three.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.